Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
And let's jump to our main stories of the day. Gambia's president-elect, Adama Barrow, tells DW his priorities once he takes office.
Everything is a priority at the moment. We have to get an overhaul of basically almost everything. The infrastructure, the economy, the judiciary, the media. These are all things that we have to look at. But as at now, our top priority is to get our cabinet in place.
Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi was due to tender his resignation on Monday after losing a referendum on constitutional reforms. What could his resignation mean for the country and the EU?
If Italy now slides once more into a period of instability, that is very difficult for a European Union that has a lot of problems on its hands anyway.
And as you know, Africa Link is now not just radio, but social radio.
That's right. So we shall be reading out some of your comments about the new Gambian president-elect, Adama Barrow.
But before that, let's listen to some news happening in Africa and around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi has offered to resign following the defeat on Sunday of a referendum on his proposed constitutional reforms. Jeroen Dijsselbloem, president of the informal forum of finance ministers of the Euro countries, known as Eurogroup, tried to allay fears that the outcome could have negative repercussions on the European Union's economy. But he added that the referendum was a warning for the EU, with elections looming in several member states.
I think that everyone who is sure about the outcome of the elections in the Netherlands, Germany and France will probably be wrong. The only thing we know is that voters are much more on the move as they were some years ago. And of course, they are critical for the situation. We're coming out of a deep crisis. It has affected the lives of many and people are concerned about that and will express their concern at election time.
The Swedish Peace Research Institute, SIPRI, found that fewer weapons were sold worldwide in 2015 than in the year before. In a report published today, the institute said that sales fell by 0.6%, dropping for the fifth consecutive year, albeit at a slower pace than in the years before. But overall sales still reached $370.7 billion. The United States Army has refused to grant an easement for the Dakota Access Pipeline, which was originally slated to run under Lake Oahe, a Missouri River reservoir where construction has been halted due to protests. The decision is seen as a victory for Native Americans and climate activists who claim that the pipeline would threaten a local water source and damage sacred land. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. According to the United Nations, humanitarian needs this year were pushed to a new high by ongoing conflicts in Syria, Yemen, South Sudan, and Nigeria. People suffering from conflicts and disasters will need a record amount of $22.2 billion in assistance, UN Humanitarian Chief Stephen O'Brien announced.
More than 80% of the needs stem from man-made conflicts, many of which are now protracted and push up demand for relief year after year. These crises affect entire regions.
Currently, the UN faces its largest ever funding gap. The organization had asked for $22 billion in 2015, but received just over $11 billion so far. The United Nations Environment Programme said in a statement that five West African countries have banned the import of so-called dirty fuel from Europe. European sellers have been accused of exploiting weak fuel standards in Africa. Nigeria, Benin, Togo, Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire will stop buying fuels with high levels of sulfur. The UN agency believes that this move will considerably reduce vehicle emissions and help more than 250 million people breathe safer, cleaner air. Sulfur particles are considered to be a principal cause of all sorts of diseases, including strokes, lung cancer and respiratory problems. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
We begin the program in The Gambia, where the president-elect, Adama Barrow, has been speaking to DW's Adrian Krish outlining his plans for the country once he takes office in January 2017. Barrow's election has raised hopes of reforms, including the release of dozens of political prisoners and closer relations with the West. Take a listen.
It was not a surprise. The Gambian people have spoken, and when the population speaks, you have to listen. Power belongs to the people. It's that force that make everybody to be positive. On that note, we thank President Jammeh for taking that bold issue.
You'll take office in January. What's top on your agenda? What are you planning to do first?
I have to get my cabinet in place, then work starts. Everything is a priority at the moment. We have to get an overhaul of basically almost everything. The infrastructure, the economy, the judiciary, the media. These are all things that we have to look at.
Now, the president has been in power for 22 years, and there were a lot of human rights violations in the past that you also personally criticized. You have a lot of your fellow opposition members who are still in prison. Are you going to prosecute the current president?
We contest election on principle. And the principle is we want a change. That change has happened. We don't have anything personal against anybody. But the moment we take office, we will investigate most of the things that have been taking place in this country. Then if you get our final report, we will act based on any final report we get. But we assure everybody, justice will be for all.
There were calls for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission already. What do you think of this idea?
Yes, that is part of what we want to happen in this country. It has happened in South Africa after the apartheid, and we have to learn from other countries. I think we will set up something like that.
President Jammeh left the Commonwealth, actually. He decided that your country has to leave Commonwealth. He wants to leave the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and also he declared the country to be an Islamic Republic. Will you change those decisions?
The decision will change. We will come back to the Commonwealth. We will be part of all international organizations. Gambia need the international, because if you are part of the international, Gambia will benefit. Gambia is a small country. We cannot afford to be isolated.
Gambia's president-elect Adama Barrow speaking to DW's Adrian Krish. And there have been lots of reactions on our Facebook page after we posted that exclusive interview. Here's my colleague Wanjiku Mwaura from the social media desk. Wanjiku, what are people saying?
Well, of course, like you just said, there's been lots of comments. And Ali Mbwado from Morogoro, Tanzania says, very nice and promising to most of us, but really a big task for the coming government is to maintain that spirit from this generation to the next generation. God bless Africa. And he's not the only one. Mama Sidibe, a Gambian in Mali, says, I'm very proud of you, Mr. President. Because of your victory, I will come for holidays this December to share my joy and happiness.
That's interesting. That's interesting indeed, yeah.
Of course. And Pa Saini Nyan from Bajul, also in Gambia, says, hey, listen, Gambia is moving forward. This is all we were looking for. Good luck, Mr. President. And Dennis Wako from Uganda, so it's not just the Gambians that are excited about this news, says that this type of change is what Ugandans wait to see.
Well, that's an understandable statement there, given that Uganda has had the same president for 30 years now.
Of course. We also have Julius Nginda from Northern Tanzania, who says, congratulations for Gambian President Honorable Adama Barrow. May you accept to follow democracy and good governance. We expect more changes are going to happen in Gambia. And Fatou Banjul Sese says, well, Mr. President, well said, Mr. President. I have hope in you that together with the Gambian people, we will make Gambia great again. Gambia is a small country. We cannot isolate ourselves from the international communities.
I can see many Gambians are so excited about, you know, their new president-elect, if I should say so.
Absolutely. And of course, the issue of religion was also raised by one Anthony Mendy, who says the Islamic states need to be changed too. The Republic of the Gambia is what it should be, and no religious isolation or naming. And of course, Margaret Vardy responded to that. And we shall sample some more comments later.
Now, Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi was due to tender his resignation on Monday after losing a referendum on constitutional reforms that was seen by many as a vote on his popularity. The reforms were designed to speed up the process of lawmaking in Italy by reducing the powers of the upper house, Senate, and of regional authorities. Before we came on air, I spoke to DW's Barbara Weser in Brussels, and I began by asking her how difficult it is going to be for Italy to form a new government.
We don't know exactly what will happen. The most likely scenario, however, is that the president, Sergio Mattarella, will form a caretaker government made up out of the big parties in parliament and try to calm down the country and try to also solve the economic problems that Italy is facing immediately with his banks.
The referendum was being closely watched elsewhere in Europe, with some commentators predicting a period of instability for the EU if Renzi were to lose. Is that how Italians see it?
Italians mostly don't see this, and that is one of the problems, because many Italians view this referendum as an eternal affair. Many people voted against it because they don't like Renzi, because they wanted to teach him a lesson, because they thought he was too arrogant and too high-handed. But they didn't really think about the larger ramifications for Europe. They do exist, however, because if Italy now slides once more into a period of instability and political unpredictability, that is very difficult for a European Union that has a lot of problems on its hands anyway, and that is also having to deal with the rise of populists in several in right-wing or left-wing populists in several European countries, and on the other hand, trying to deal with a difficult international situation after the election of Donald Trump for the next U.S. president. So the last thing Europe needed or wanted was political chaos in Italy.
How is the outcome of the referendum going to affect Italy's relations with the rest of the EU?
It is difficult to say, because if there will be a caretaker government made up out of some elder statesmen from the big parties here in parliament, from the right, the wing, the conservatives and the socialists, then there might be a period of relative calm. However, a government like that can't really go on with reforms that Renzi did start and can't really decide much. They can't really do anything groundbreaking. So it would just be a holding operation. And in that sense, Europe can't really rely on the cooperation of such a government, not in any substantial measure. On the other hand, Europe, of course, does not want very quick elections in Italy, because then the country really could be thrown into turmoil if the right-wing five-star movement would, in fact, come out being the strongest party. So there are a lot of factors that make this a very difficult decision for the European Union.
DW's Barbara Weser in Brussels. South Africa's main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, launched a legal bid this Monday to block government plans to withdraw from the International Criminal Court, saying the move was unconstitutional. In October, the government notified the United Nations that it would leave the ICC, dealing a major blow to the troubled institution that was set up to try the world's worst crimes. The DA lobbied for the High Court in Pretoria to nullify the decision, saying that the government had bypassed and undermined Parliament, which had ratified South Africa's membership of the court in 1998. Here's Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg.
On Monday, the North Gauteng High Court in Pretoria heard arguments challenging the constitutionality of South Africa's notice to withdraw from the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The case was brought by the Democratic Alliance, the DA, and several other interested parties. The DA argued in court that the power to withdraw from the ICC lies with Parliament, not the executive. It further argued that the cabinet failed to follow procedure in arriving to this decision. The DA also told the court that the decision to withdraw undermines South Africa's international obligation to uphold human rights. In October, South Africa announced that it had informed the United Nations Secretary General about its intention to withdraw from the ICC. At the time, South Africa said the Roman statutes of the ICC were hindering its relations with foreign countries. The hearing has been set for 2 days, Monday and Tuesday.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg. You are listening to Africa Link with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes here on Africa Link, Ghanaians head to the polls to elect their new leader.
Fake U.S. embassy in Ghana? Huh.
Plus, Kenyan doctors working in government hospitals strike for better pay.
Doctors in Kenya, to the ones at the county, we are not engaging in any small fights anymore. To the doctors, I want to tell you, brace yourself for a hard fight.
Before the doctors, let's go to Ghana. In less than 48 hours, Ghanaians will be going to the polls in presidential and parliamentary elections. Incumbent President John Mahama and his rival opposition candidate Nana Akufo-Addo have been canvassing hard for votes across the country. Campaigning officially came to an end on Monday, as Isaac Kelechi reports.
It has been a grueling campaign for all the political parties contesting Wednesday's election. The leading contenders in the elections are the incumbent John Mahama of the ruling National Democratic Congress, NDC, and Nana Akufo-Addo of the opposition New Patriotic Party, NPP. The campaign has been fought on radio and television.
Ghana needs a leader, a visionary leader.
I am a business owner. 4 years of doomsday has affected my business badly. High utility bills has brought my business to a standstill. Mahama must go. We need change.
Fellow Ghanaian, I want to tell you why I am voting for John Mahama as president on 7th December. He is tolerant, respectful, focused, and has a clear sense of direction for our nation. Vote John Mahama. Vote NDC.
The candidates have also been campaigning across the country in person.
But the one who is the leader of the opposition, Ejo.
That's the incumbent John Mahama entertaining his supporters. He's leaving no stone unturned as he makes a case as to why he should be re-elected.
On 7 December, the destiny of this country is in our own hands. Whether we want to turn back the clock of progress or we want to continue moving forward and making progress is in your hands. I've done my best. The rest is left to you. But I know you will make the right decision. It is simple. It is logical.
But his main challenger, Nana Akufo-Addo, has been equally energetic on the campaign trail.
To ride on the back of the elephant, Atiglini,
Nanado says the president hasn't done enough to justify a second term in office. He believes his program to industrialize the country will persuade large numbers of Ghanaians to vote for him.
We're going to build a new harbor and the landing site and storage facilities that we need to get the fishing community on the coast working. We're going to do it. We have a program on national redevelopment and expansion, involving the industrialization of our country. Every district is going to have one factory.
There has been concern about clashes between supporters of the two parties, the NPP and the NDC. The Inspector General of Police in Ghana, John Kudalo, says security measures have been revised to avoid such incidences in future.
We have produced flyers and posters for members of the public as guides before, during and after the general elections. I'm confident that these measures have prepared personnel professionally and sensitized the public enough to ensure a peaceful election.
But major stakeholders aren't taking chances. A peace pact has been signed by all presidential candidates contesting Wednesday's polls. This is to serve as evidence of their resolve to ensure that there is peace before, during, and after the elections. Ghana is generally viewed as a stable place where democratic institutions are respected. And even if the election result is contested, there is no expectation of widespread violence. Two sessions of early voting have already taken place for people unable to vote on the polling day. That includes security officials, journalists, and election officials. The process has faced some challenges, including a number of missing names on voting lists. The Electoral Commission has assured Ghanaians that such a mix-up won't recur on polling day.
Isaac Kelechi reporting on the upcoming elections in Ghana.
Health check.
Doctors working in Kenya's government hospitals went on strike today to demand fulfillment of a 2013 agreement between their union and the government that would raise their pay and improve working conditions. Police fired tear gas to disperse them. The doctors are demanding a 300% pay rise and better working conditions. From Nairobi, Andrew Asike sent us this report.
These were the scenes in the Kenyan capital Nairobi on Monday as doctors made true their threats to down their tools if the government will not address their grievances. Clad in scrubs and other medical uniforms and armed with a variety of medical accessories such as stethoscopes, the thousands of doctors brought traffic to a standstill in Nairobi. The health professionals from the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union had issued a strike notice over the weekend, saying that they will withdraw labor with effect from Monday, 5th December 2016 due to a three-year unresolved dispute involving a collective bargaining agreement, CBA, signed in 2013 by the union and the Kenyan government. Speaking on the sidelines of the protest, Dr. Ouma Olunga from the Kenya Medical Practitioners and Pharmacists Union, KMPDU, say that the doctors will not go back to work until their grievances are addressed by the government.
Nothing shall stand between doctors and the CBA implementation. Not a jail term. Not many court orders. The only thing that will get doctors back to work is CBA. Governor threatening doctors this morning.
Olunga called on all Kenyan doctors to stay away from work until the government grants them their salary hike.
Doctors in Kenya, to the ones at the county, we are not engaging in any small fights anymore. To the doctors, I want to tell you, brace yourself for a hard fight. Brace yourself for a hard fight. Because we are not going back to work until the CBA money is in our bank account. We, the doctors, are very valuable people. Our work begins with our dignity. Not governors coming to slap doctors in hospital.
Seth Panyako, the Secretary General of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union, said that he was aware that over 100 mentally ill patients had escaped from the Mathari Hospital after the doctors stationed there went out onto the streets. But he said that he will not call off the strike until the government grants them their pay hike.
Andrew Owasike reporting. This is a story that has been widely discussed on social media platforms in Kenya. So, Wanjiku, what are people saying about the doctor's strike? Because we understand that mentally ill patients escaped from one hospital in the country.
Indeed, Isaac, the mentally ill from Mathare Hospital took to their heels once they realized that the doctors who make routine checks with their medication and syringes were nowhere in sight. That said, for the Kenyans who couldn't join the doctors on the streets, they went online to voice their support for the doctor's strike and vent their anger at the government that has failed to honor its pledge. Most are tired of the corruption cases involving billions, and all they want is that the government pays the doctors.
So what are they saying?
They're tweeting using the hashtag Doctors on Strike. Shadrach Njoroge says, only Kenya can afford to pay illiterate members of county assembly 400,000 Kenya shillings every month and then struggle to pay its doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Honored Sin says, you can grab our lands, our roads, our agriculture, but not our health. Alfred Jackson, who refers to himself as the voice of reason, wrote and said, when you see doctors on strike, then you realize there's real cause for alarm.
Okay, seems like everyone is in support of the doctors. Anyway, we have to leave it at that. Time now to take a look at sports. And shortly before we went on air, I was joined in the studio by DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold. Before we delved into what happened in the Bundesliga over the weekend, I asked him about some breaking news. The Court of Arbitration for Sports has rejected the appeal of former FIFA president Sepp Blatter against his 6-year ban from football. What more could he tell us about the verdict and the Blatter case generally?
What Blatter got banned for originally just over a year ago was for this 2 million franc payment that was made from FIFA to the former UEFA president Michel Platini in 2011. It was, they say, for consultancy work that Platini did for FIFA 9 years earlier. What the decision today said was that for various reasons there was no actual contract between the two, so former FIFA president Blatter violated FIFA's code of ethics, so the decision stands.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's now dig into the Bundesliga matches that were played over the weekend. To me, the big surprise was Hoffenheim getting its revenge against FC Köln and walloping it 4-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're right. With Hoffenheim and Cologne going into that match, we're right beside each other in the table, so you expected quite a hard-fought match in Hoffenheim, so I thought maybe they had the edge, but I certainly didn't expect the 4-0 walloping, as you say.
Yes, sure, indeed.
Cologne's defense really didn't look very good in this one, and the other thing is if Anthony Modeste doesn't score, no goals for Cologne.
Let's now talk about Leipzig that is still flying high after a narrow 2-1 win against Schalke, making it 8 straight wins. But what do you make of the controversial penalty that was awarded to Leipzig just seconds into the game?
Well, I think everybody's been talking about that around the water cooler this Monday. I had a couple of looks at it myself. It really looks like a dive. It doesn't look like there was any contact with the goalkeeper, Ralf Fährmann, who was then given the yellow card. Werner has come out with weird comments. He basically said actually he was touched by Naldo, who was chasing him, and that's where the contact happened. But it doesn't look, when you look at it, it doesn't look like that's what caused him to fall.
Yeah.
He's also basically admitted that it was a dive.
Now, Hertha Berlin was also unstoppable when it played Wolfsburg, and the game ended 3-2 in its favor. Wolfsburg's current position isn't impressive at all, and with a tough match this weekend against Bayern Munich, things might get even worse, isn't it?
Yeah, they could well get worse. You know, today is their sporting director Klaus Allof's 60th birthday. Can't be a very happy birthday for him, given the way things are going in Wolfsburg. Yeah, I don't see any real way out of this at the moment. They're in real bad time and having a real bad time of things, and they've got a real problem with a young player by the name of Julian Draxler.
Yeah, do we know why the fans were not friendly to Julian Draxler? Every time he touched the ball, there were whistles from the crowd. I mean, it was really not fair enough.
Well, I think if you were a Wolfsburg fan, you'd be doing the same thing because, first of all, he's been underperforming, as has most of the team. But what's really upset the fans was what happened before the season when he basically demanded that he get a transfer. He's repeated this demand, and this is just basically about a year after he had come to Wolfsburg for big money as the replacement to Kevin De Bruyne, and he's never lived up to that billing. I think that's really upset a lot of people.
DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold. Now, a fake U.S. embassy that operated for about a decade in Ghana's capital, issuing counterfeit and fraudulently obtained visas, has been shut down. Wanjiku, this is a story that has set tongues wagging, not only in Africa, but around the world, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. I mean, it's still unclear how the gang obtained legitimate U.S. documents, but people don't seem too shocked by it, at least in Africa.
I mean, they've been committing, of course. And what are they saying?
Yes, Asafo Ajayi Jr. from Accra, Ghana, writes, ha, 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 it's an inside job. And Ma Suleiman from Kaduna in Nigeria says that for how long and how comes the U.S. keeps accepting the fake visas authorized by the Ghanaian authority unawares? Of course, this is something that is making lots of people question the legitimacy of the entire case. Kennedy Nana Appiah says that it is an inside job, but the Americans will never say. Isaac Ehosa Godwin says, wow, how I wish I had traveled through this visa issuers. Onifadi Oluwase Babs from Lagos says, this is an inside scam from the U.S. Embassy.
That is a baffling case indeed. And what is the second topic that you have?
The second topic was the celebration of the International Day for Persons with Disability this Saturday. And we asked some of you, What do you think about the development aid for persons with disability? A gentleman by the name Going Once from Lusaka, Zambia says, we do not need aid, just fair trade.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Africa Link. For more news, visit dw.com/Africa.
Or follow us on DW Africa Facebook page.
Until tomorrow, same time, bye from us.